On this episode of Warbird Radio Presents, we sit down with two former EC-121 crew members and hear their stories from the Dew Line. Stand by. Warbird Radio Presents, a 121 story, starts now. Triple tail C-121 is easy to spot. The graceful lines of the constellation are often looked upon as things of beauty. But for the men of the Naval Aircraft Restoration Foundation, their love for the 121 is much deeper than that of just a casual admirer. These guys, they gather from all over the country and volunteer their time to museums who maintain their airplane, the 121. We recently caught up with them while they were working on the EC-121 that's currently on display at the Museum of Aviation in Warner Robins, Georgia. Here now is retired U.S. Navy Commander Dr. Gerald Durbin.
Well, we started about 10 years ago, and one of the guys found a plane up in Rantoul, Illinois, which was a EC-121K, like the airborne early warning plane. And it was sitting out in a pasture full of bird poop and everything else on it. And so he got on the web and sent out emails and so forth. And that's when I found out about it. So we started in 2000 working on an airplane, which was 141311. And that was a plane from VW-13 on it, served mostly in Argentia, Newfoundland, on the Dew Line. And so we spent about 20,000 hours, close to 20,000 hours working on that airplane. It belongs to the Navy. And trying to put it back in its original shape. The back end was all gutted out, so we built wooden mock-ups and so forth and put in it just so we could have a plane to take tours through. And we've had like over 20, 25,000 people that go through the airplane in Rantoul. And 4 years ago, we came here to Warner Robins, and when we found out they had an EC-121K also, which was originally a Navy Willie Victor II, which was in better shape than the one in Rantoul, so we came down here and started working on it. And we've been working on it 4 years now, and we've got close to 20,000 hours into this airplane on it, in trying to recreate the interior and preserve the exterior of the airplane on it. 2 years ago, we decided to form a not-for-profit foundation, so it would be tax, any donations would be tax deductible, and that's what we have we're basically set up now underneath the Naval Aircraft Restoration Foundation, which is a 501(c) corporation.
So you guys show up at a museum and you see an airplane that's derelict. A lot of folks just kind of say, well, boy, it's a shame that museum doesn't take better care of that airplane, or they ought to bring it inside, they ought to do this. You guys have seen a few airplanes like this, and you started doing something about it. You've, as you said, already have 20,000-plus hours in this one. What are some of the major projects that you're working on right now with this airplane?
Well, one of the problems with most of the museum airplanes is that they sit. And they rot, and the engines rot, so to speak. And these are 3350s on it, Pratt & Whitney 3350s. And if they sit very long, they freeze up. And as far as I know, this is one of the few planes in a museum that the engines do rotate. We came in and we took all the plugs out. We've oiled them. We've got them to, all four of them will rotate. Twice a year, we move the props through and so forth and re-oil them and that type of thing. We have bird screened them and so forth to keep all the birds out, which really tears them up. And so that's one project. Another project is to repair the flaps on the airplane, on it, which have... they had weather rubbish strips on them, and it got dirt and stuff in it, and it corroded, and they're all rotten along the edges. And so we're in the process of replacing pieces of those flaps and cleaning all the corrosion off, repainting them so that preserve the airplane. Then the major project is trying to reproduce the interior. We this plane was fairly complete from the radio compartment forward, but it was missing refrigerator and coffee jugs and stuff like that. And having sat for 50 years, all the foam rubber deteriorated, naga hides falling apart. So we're basically have gotten the whole cockpit complete now, except for clocks, which we need clocks. From that point aft, we're reupholstering the whole air. All the beds are, I got foam rubber, the new foam rubber to put in it, reupholstering all the seats, benches, everything. We found a refrigerator, which is very close to the original, and that's now in the airplane. And then we went back to the radio compartment, and 4 years ago, we went to Grable, Wyoming, and stripped nine Navy aircraft, P-2Vs, that were up there, and took those parts and radios, instruments, things of this nature, to put into this airplane, which we have, our foundation has in storage. So now the radio, from the radio compartment forward, the navigation station is almost complete, except for missing two black boxes, which we're in the process of making mock-ups on. And the radio compartment, the radio position is complete. We've put in a APS-20 radar from one of the P-2s, which was like the original. And we've rebuilt the CIC section, the combat information section, officer's table on it. And we're working on electronic countermeasures and making dummy consoles. Now, the dummy consoles that are going into this particular airplane are as close to original as we can get them. Because we took switches, knobs, and we made our own knobs, hundreds of knobs on it. And I got molds off the plane in Pensacola to do that with. And I've spent hours, well, actually about 5 weeks inside the plane in Pensacola making measurements. And most of that's in CAD drawings now. So anybody's interested in restoring a Connie could do it if they have them. And so we're in the process of trying to reproduce the rear of the plane. And all this is so that the plane can be opened up for tours on it, and people can go through it and see what the Cold War was about and the airborne early warning. The Dew Line was established back in 1953, 54, and it lasted for 10 years up until like 1968 or something of that nature. And the Air Force patrolled along the coast, and East Coast, West Coast, the Navy went from Midway Island to the Aleutians and from Argentia, Newfoundland to the Azores. Most of these were like 15-hour flights. On it, we had five each barrier. And there were four of them. Had five aircraft airborne, 24/7, and each plane carried 21 in a crew. And during that period of time, we lost nine aircraft and all their crews, or most of the crews, on it, through crashes, and one of them just disappeared.
Well, they weren't up there sightseeing. Why don't you maybe elaborate a little bit on some of the missions that these airplanes actually flew?
Well, actually, the EC-121 had several missions. The primary missions that they were, they originally came out as a cargo plane on it, and which was called a C-69 during the Korean airlift, and they hauled coal. after that, the Navy bought 124 of them to use on the distant early warning line on it. And I believe 48 of them were given to the Air Force. I know that's close. And the Air Force flew those along the coast, and they operated out of McClellan. We operated out of Barbers Point, and the East Coast operated out of Pax River and Argentia and the Azores. They were used for radar picket. There was actually five aircraft airborne, and there were three to four surface ships, what they call DERs, destroyer radar picket ships on it, and to keep the Russians from flying into the United States with nuclear weapons.
Early warning radar at its infancy, really.
Well, it was early warning radar on it. And then there were about eight of them that were also converted into weather planes on it. This particular plane here was used by the Naval Research Laboratory, and it's done all kinds of things. Spooky. It had one of the first inertial systems. It was used to check out the GPS. It was used for airborne magnetic anomaly studies, just all kinds of things on it. But the nice thing about it was never really near salt water, so there's very little corrosion on the airframe, whereas the other airplanes have massive amounts of corrosion in them, and there's no way to stop it. The one in Rantoul, we had to almost completely rebuild the whole rear end of the airplane. The rudders, we had to rebuild ribs, stringers were gone in it. The front sections had holes in the fairings, and so we rebuilt that. And so this plane is in much better shape than that.
This was a good project choice for you then.
Yes, yes, it was good. I also have the P-2 out here.
Right.
Which
right,
is
right
an RB-69 on it, which the CIA had eight of them, and the Air Force, they contracted the Air Force to fly them, and they were used for patrolling the borders of Russia on it for 2 years, and then they returned back to the Navy. And this particular airplane sitting here, the interior, it's one of probably three planes that I know of, P-2s, that has the actual interior put back in the airplane. This one's almost complete, probably 95 complete. It is very, very rare to see a plane that complete. And we're slowly restoring it also back to its original condition.
Well, talk about your own personal service history a little, because I'd like, what's the tie for you to either of those airplanes?
Well, I joined the Navy in 1954 and served on board the Shangri-La for a year.
And, the real Shangri-La.
Yeah, the real Shangri-La, the CVA-38. And then from there, I went to airborne early warning. I was enlisted at the time, and I was electronics tech. And so I was electronics tech on these planes for 2 years, have about 800 hours in them. And then I went into the P-2Vs and 1,800 there, and then P-3s and 1,500 there, and then other T-34s, etc. And after 6 years, I got a commission and retired as a commander, CO of a P-3 squadron.
And what did you do for the P-3 squadron?
I started as I was a tackle, tactical air combat controller initially, and then I became the CO of two squadrons, and very unusual, but anyway.
Talk about the similarities between the two airplanes, because I know that some of the missions were awfully similar.
Well, you have AWACS, and ours is sort of the Johnson's Wax version, the original on it. We carried a crew of 21, and it was actually two crews, and they served 3 hours on, 3 hours off. There were five scopes in the plane. We had an airborne... we had surface search radar on it, the APS-20, Baker Easy on it, and it had a 250-mile range. And then there was a height finder, so you can tell the height of an incoming plane on it, which was an APS-45, which was on top of the airplane. And then they had electronic countermeasures, which was all passive. You could only hear. So you're listening for subs or any radar or anything like that on it. And... that's basically what the plane did, you know, every mission. And every mission, what you'd fly for 15 hours and come back, and between the pre-flight and post-flight, you were usually 20 hours, and then you got one day off and you flew again for another 15, 20 hours in the plane, over and over and over again and again and again. And some of the guys out here, like Bob Fitzsimmons and so forth, he's got thousands of hours, you know, watching a scope.
Just sitting there watching for anything that might look unusual here, I guess.
Right, looking for airplanes.
What do you want folks to remember about this? And when they come out here and they see the work that you guys have put in, what do you want them to take away with them?
Well, it was during the era of the Cold War, and before Vietnam, actually, on it. And with the Russian threat, before they had the over-the-horizon radar and so forth, they filled in that gap for about 10 years on it, until they got the over-the-horizon radar. These squadrons, like the Navy squadrons, were the largest squadrons as far as I know, in any of the military services. Because we had, like, an air bars run out in the Pacific. We had, I think it was 38 aircraft in one squadron on it. And, you know, thousands of guys. When I left the squadron, I think there was 3,000 in the squadron. So it was a very, very big operation. And it was run like an airlines. I mean, it was... If a plane was down, another plane was back up, and it left. You know, if that was down, there was another one there, and it left. So there was, they tried to have very good coverage on it. And the reason why we're, you know, we were 19, 20, 21 years old, and you went out and served for months at a time, you know, before you ever came back to the United States. You know, you were stuck on, like, a Midway Islands. You served 3 weeks there, and then you got 1 week off to go back and work. And then you had three more weeks out there. So you flew as a crew. So over a period of 2 to 3 years, when you're flying as a single crew, you get to know everybody, and, you know, they become your friends. And... So that's the reason why the people are here. A lot of the people that come here, because they have thousands of hours flying an airplane, and they just love the old airplane. It got them there and back, day after day after day. You know, so
if folks want to come out here and get involved in this project or any of the projects that you guys are working on and will be working on, how can they get a hold of you?
They can contact me. We'll have a website up, which is NavyArf.com, hopefully this month, on it. And there'll be a place on there where they can get a hold of me and we'll schedule. We work the first 3 weeks in May and the first 3 weeks in October.
We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll sit down with a former 121 scope operator. Stay tuned. Warbird Radio presents a 121 story. We'll continue right after this.
This is Warbird Radio.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson, host of the RC Skill Builder Show. If you're interested in radio-controlled scale models, join us every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern for our live show. We'll be covering the latest news in RC scale and have some great interviews every week. That's every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. with rebroadcast throughout the week, the RC Scale Builder Show, here on Warbird Radio.
Our thanks to Ezel Aviation for generously supporting Warbird Radio. To find out more, visit them online at EzelAviation.com. That's EzelAviation.com.
Now, this is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
Now showing on AeroCinema.com.
If anyone had said you're going to get involved in auto charas, I'd have said that's great. Windmill thing, no. As soon as I got the eyesight test, the doctor said, what if you never be able to land an airplane? I made suicidal pass after pass trying to get the thing down. And after several times doing this thing, with no fuel showing on the gauges, I called up and said, couldn't the crew bail out? There was no sense in them staying with me while I was trying to do it. And all the time we were flying, we had an atom bomb on board. And when we were in a certain area of the North Pole from Canada, if we got the message, we had a target to attack in Russia. People say, why do you have so many? My answer is, it's like having a harem of girls or women. They're all the same basic design, but they kind of differ in nature. I remember when I landed, a cubby of broccoli was looking at me from a distance. He said, yeah, same build, he'll do. Meaning I was the same build as Sean Connery.
The Logbook Series, featuring Ken Wallace, now showing on AeroCinema.com.
This is Warbird Radio.
Welcome back. On this episode of Warbird Radio Presents, we're visiting with former C-121 crew members. The men volunteer their time with the Naval Aircraft Restoration Foundation and are currently working to restore an EC-121 that's on display at the Museum of Aviation in Warner Robins, Georgia. Here now is former EC-121 crew member Bob Fitzsimmons.
I spent 3 years doing the EC-121. We call them a WV-2 at the time, a Willie Victor 2.
Tell me about the airplane, Bob. I noticed it has this giant growth on the bottom of it. What were you, there's a lot of rumor now. Joe sitting across the table here told me that you guys used to bake cakes in that thing. Is that true?
No, I could tell you what sometimes it was used for, but actually what it was used for was that it housed the APS-20 search radar. Mm. And that was our primary radar for picking up our contact, mostly aerial contacts when I first started. And I was in, I started flying in 56, and that's when the barrier first started.
Big radar down there.
Yeah, that's the big radar. The one up on top, that's the APS-45. That's a height finder. And, our job was to search for airborne contacts. And we'd pick up the airborne contacts, and then we'd make out a report, and that would be filed with through channels to NORAD in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And NORAD would check them against flight plans, and if there was no flight plan, why then they would send interceptors out from a base. I think Presque Isle, Maine was the ones that they sent them out for us. I flew out of Newfoundland from Argentia, Newfoundland to the Azores and back.
This was serious business back then in the Cold War. I mean, you guys were really the nation's frontline defense.
Not too many people knew about it. There was, there was a TV promotion done once, and they went aboard one of the planes and, you know, for the publicity, but there never was very much publicity. We didn't, everything was supposed to be really secret back then. We weren't even allowed to take a camera on board. Some of the later guys, they've got all kinds of pictures because they were able to take pictures on board the airplane, which we weren't allowed to do at first.
Well, tell us about some of the average mission. I know they were long, 15 plus hours.
Ours, the longest one I was ever on was 16. They averaged about 12 to 14 on the East Coast, flying from Newfoundland to the Azores and back. On the West Coast, they flew out of Midway to the Aleutians and back, and theirs did go to 16. They were probably more like 14, 16, maybe just a little longer.
It's a long time to be in a big steel tube like that, you know? Big.
Yeah. Well, we had double crews, more or less two of everybody. So, like on the radar, why I used to be on four on and four off. And when you were off way, that was free time. You could either sleep or we played cards or, you know, just whatever free time, read.
What did you do?
I was a radar operator, airborne air controller. Mm-hmm. I spent about 50% of the time on a scope, and the other time that I was working, I was on the plotter and mm-hmm. and working the plot.
And then on the time off, were you a card player or a sleeper?
Well, I slept, and then there was some nice pilots there that the co-pilot would get up, and the pilot would let you sit there in a co-pilot seat, and then you can fly the airplane. So mm-hmm. I got a little bit of stick time that's not loggable, but
but nonetheless fun though.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You're basically, we all of us guys were, I was a little older than most of the guys, but we were basically 19, 20, 21 years old. Mm-hmm. And you're indestructible, so it didn't matter, you know, about anything. You were, it was just different. It was an experience that that I really enjoyed. In fact, I'd planned on staying in the Navy, but then I got married before I got out, and Eisenhower sent the Marines into Lebanon about the time I was due to get out, so they held me back into the squadron. They wouldn't let me. I wanted to go over to Barbers Point, Hawaii. I mean, I had enough ice and snow up in Newfoundland. It was kind of a barren place. So I got out and did other things.
What do you like about coming back here and being involved with the airplane today? I mean, it's been I would imagine there was a little bit of time in your life when you didn't see one real regular. Now today you're around one a long time.
I started doing this, what we're doing here is working on these planes, and I started doing it in the year 2000. And that was in Rantoul, Illinois, at the base up there, the old Chanute Air Force Base. And that airplane up there was a little more special than this one, because that one I had about 70 hours of flying time in. Mm. And this one here I'd never flown in. So I can remember that first time that I drove up there to help with those guys. And I mean, just coming around the corner of that one building and seeing that airplane sit there, I kind of got tears in my eyes, you know, because I hadn't seen one in quite a few years. Mm. And then you start realizing that here's one of your airplanes that you flew in is in a museum in Rantoul. There was another one in Florence that I'd flown in. South Carolina, and then there's one that's still out in McClellan, out in Sacramento, California. All three of them were ones that I flew in, and I mean, they're in museums. What does that make me? So, yeah, it was really that part is enjoyable, just getting to see the plane again, you just get familiar with and remembering, and of course all the guys. I met a whole passel of guys that I didn't know when I was in the service, you know, mm-hmm. but because we all did the same thing, we've gotten together. But now, today, one of the guys that's out here, he was on my first flight crew. Mm-hmm. So we were on flight crews together. And one of the guys that couldn't make it because his wife got sick, he couldn't come this time. He was on one of my other flight crews, so it's good to get together with you know, your old friends, and
including the type that have wings.
Yeah, right. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Now, what are you personally working on? What are you working on out here? I know we're going to go walk through the airplane here in a few minutes and take everybody along with us, but. What are you working on? What have you been spending your days doing here lately?
Well, we've been a little stymied with things, but things that are broke. But we started to repair a couple of flaps that were so corroded that we have to patch the flaps, and we're going to be building some bunks. See, this airplane, when it came out of the factory, it didn't go into one of the barrier squadrons. It went straight to sort of a research and development outfit. And so it really wasn't set up the same way as ours were. So we have to build all of this stuff for in the back. So we're in the process. We got the bunks all built, and we're going to get those going. And the radar consoles, like I sat at, we've built two mock-ups, and we're trying to get those set up so when we take people through, why we can. Now, I sat here instead of looking at a a bare wall and saying, well, there was a thing here, and we sat there and looked at this scope. So when you got something there, up in Rantoul, we had the same thing, but we had built, somebody had built them out of plywood. And they were good, but these are going to be a little bit more realistic, I think.
Well, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your service. And I'll let you sort of have the final word here, if you will.
It'd be nice if we could get a hold of a lot more of the guys that we were with. But then again, you know, we're like everybody else. We're all getting older, and it's kind of hard. We've been doing this now. This is my 11th year. So if we could get more guys involved, I know things are tough with the economic situation and everything. So it makes it tough to come in here. Four or five of us that have RVs, and we travel around, and we can do it that way. But it's tough. Like we had a couple of guys from one from Sacramento that used to fly in, and his buddy from Seattle. And I mean, wherever we were, they'd fly in and they'd stay for a week or 2 weeks. And yeah, so it'd be nice if we could get some help for NARF, Naval Aircraft Restoration Foundation.
You've got lots of jobs. You just need the people now, right?
Yeah. That's about it.
So. Well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us today, and I'm looking forward to seeing the airplane.
Okay. Appreciate that.
And see the airplane we did. But that doesn't work out all that well for radio. So if you visit our website, warbirdradio.com, and search for this story, the 121 story, you'll find detailed pictures and even a video tour from our visit. That's all the time we have for this episode, but stay tuned. There's more Warbird Radio coming up right after this.
What about over here? You got another panel, looks like. We're building two of these.